The NFL's third week starts tonight in the Meadowlands. We get the Jets and Aaron Rodgers and the Patriots, and then we get a full football, full weekend of football with week three ending Monday night in Cincinnati with our team against the Bengals. Washington right now, the biggest underdog on the board, Denton. They are 8-point dogs against the Bengals. The biggest underdogs in NFL weeks one and two, both won outright. New England beat Cincinnati in week one. And last weekend, it was the Raiders upsetting Baltimore. I don't know if anything really even qualifies as an upset in the NFL anymore until you've really identified the truly horrible teams. And at this point, there's one. The one horrible team would be Carolina. But even that changes this week because Andy Dalton is going to start. And believe it or not, the Panthers are a short underdog on the road against that Raiders team that beat Baltimore. Go figure. More on that tomorrow. Washington has a shot. We will certainly get into how and why they can win this game, which I think they can, more tomorrow and then on Monday. But for starters, if they run the football the way they did Sunday against the Giants, against a team that quite honestly right now is healthier and better defensively than Cincinnati is, if they can run the football that way, they have a very good chance. Good morning. We have some guests on the show today. Charch will be on with us today in his normal spot, Fantasy Football Talk with Charch at 11:25. Mitch Tischler from JP's podcast will be on. Love Mitch. He'll be on with us at 10:35. And then Nick Ackridge from Pro Football Focus joined me on my podcast yesterday. We're going to play some of that a little bit later on in the program. But I got this from Daniel. And Daniel writes, Kevin, I think it was mean to talk about Terry McLaurin the way you guys did yesterday. Polling if he's a true number one was way too negative, even for sports talk radio. So, you know, I read this, and by the way, Daniel wasn't the only one. Although most of you, with the poll that we put out yesterday, we put out a poll yesterday asking if you think Terry McLaurin is a true number one wide receiver. 62% roughly said no, 38% said yes. Most of the comments that I got at me or even in response to the poll were weighing in on the poll question. But there were a couple that said this is, you know, this isn't right to go after Terry that way. You know, in most cases, Daniel, I would literally tell you just to man up. You know, these are professional athletes. This is, you know, talking about this team, given what we've gone through over the last quarter century, they should be pleased with just any kind of conversation about them. But I actually think you're right about this one. And not because it's mean. I mean, mean is, in my opinion, a bit soft in your response. But I do think it was far too early to have this conversation about Terry McLaurin in a new, brand new offense. It hasn't been too early to have the view that I've had for, you know, a couple of years now, and the view that many of you have shared, which is, look, he's a really good receiver. He's not an elite receiver. He's somewhere between, you know, 14 and 18. And with a lot of the new receivers that have come into the league the last couple of years, he's probably backing up to somewhere between 18 and 22. By definition, that means he's a number one wide receiver because, look, some teams have two number ones on their squad. So, you know, if you got 32 teams, that means there's an opportunity for 32 number one wide receivers. But I think we all know what we mean when we say a true number one. You're talking about a game changer. You're talking about a player where defenses and defensive coordinators have to coordinate and plan for that player, a player that can truly impact the game by himself. And by the way, with great quarterbacking or good quarterbacking or without it, we've seen that happen in spots. I mean, Garrett Wilson had a very good rookie season without a quarterback. Devontae Adams has had good seasons without real good quarterbacking. Yes, it is way too early, and I agree with you, Daniel. And I thought about this actually when we put the poll out yesterday, when Denton said we were putting the poll out. I'm like, yeah. But it generated a lot of response, and there is a conversation going on among the fans about Terry McLaurin's 4.9 yards per reception in the first 2 weeks and why he hasn't been targeted more and why the reception yardage isn't greater. It's going to be. Okay, Terry McLaurin is a good NFL receiver. He's not going to average 4.9 yards per reception. I mean, there are at least two or three plays that were there if the quarterback connects with him on that would have him leading the team in average yards per reception in terms of the wide receivers. Actually, that's not true now after Noah Brown on Sunday. Noah Brown, his three catches for 56 yards, that's 18.7 yards per reception. I'm not concerned about Terry McLaurin going away, becoming less impactful than he's been previously with a better quarterback and a better coordinator. He has had terrible quarterback play. There is no doubt about that. But the elite receivers, take Devontae Adams as an example, put him in, you know, Vegas, put Aiden O'Connell, a rookie quarterback out of Purdue, with him most of last year. He still had 100 catches. But, Daniel, you're right. You're right. It's way too early to be down on or to even give the impression that we're going after Terry, because that's the last guy we need to go after. He's been one of the bright lights during, you know, the last several years, which haven't really included much good to see, and he's been that. And I think he's going to shine in this offense and with this quarterback. I do. I will make one other, if I didn't do this yesterday, I think I did, one other constructive critique. He and all of the receivers have to block better. He's far from an elite blocker. Not a bad blocker, but far from an elite blocker. And he and the other receivers are going to have to become better at that. Right now, their best blocker in terms of a skill position player is John Bates. It's not even debatable. He's their best blocking tight end. He's probably their best. He's actually a very good blocking tight end as compared to other blocking tight ends around the league. Bates is kind of a sleeper important player for them right now, especially if you consider, and I am considering this, that Washington, at least this year, and I think Kingsbury is going to really lean on this, they're going to become a team that ends up in that top five-ish range in average yards rushing per game. I mean, already it's two games, you know, small sample size. But Washington right now, sixth in the league in rushing yards per game at 176.5. They obviously had a big game Sunday against the Giants. So that is, you know, that will be certainly something that I think we're going to see all year. And it's going to be a requirement, a necessity for Terry McLaurin and De'Ami Brown and Noah Brown and Zacchaeus, et cetera, to be involved in the blocking game, because the best rushing teams have their receivers as good blockers. You don't want to have to go three tight ends to run the football. Zach Ertz, he's going to be important as a blocker as well, and he was outstanding on Sunday. By the way, if you take away just rushing yards per game and you just look at average yards per carry, Washington also sixth in the league after 2 weeks. You know, you've seen over the last, since Lamar and since Jalen in Philly, Philly and Baltimore have been, you know, consistently among the top rushing yard teams in the league. You know, Baltimore was number one last year. In 2022, it was Philly and Baltimore in the top five. In 2021, it was Philly number one, Baltimore number three. You know, that's a way to win games and to be competitive and have a chance to make the playoffs. I think that's what we're seeing the beginning of. Not that they're not going to take shots, not that they're not going to throw the football, but I think this is going to develop into a team that really ends up in top five range rushing yards per game, with Brian Robinson Jr. in particular having kind of a top five rushing season. I think that's one way for them to really have a shot this year to be competitive to win games. Because if you are concerned about them defensively after two games, and there is a reason to be concerned, as I discussed yesterday, it would be the fact that the Giants came in and manhandled them. And if they had had a kicker, it would have been really ugly, more likely than not, in terms of the discussion about the defense after a potential loss. But their best defense could be time of possession, rushing the football, maintaining the football, and keeping the defense on the sideline. That will be a huge key Monday night. They can't win the game Monday night against Cincinnati if they don't stay on the field offensively. I think that's a given. All right, let's get to a what do you got?
All right.
What do you got?
So, I don't know how many of you guys watched Sunday Night Football between Houston and Chicago. It was the matchup of C.J. Stroud, the number two pick from the year before, the offensive rookie of the year last year in Houston against Caleb Williams in a nationally televised Sunday night game. Caleb did not play that well. He had some moments, but overall, I would imagine that anybody grading Caleb Williams on Sunday night, other than Chris Collinsworth, would have given him, you know, at best, like a C-. He didn't get a lot of help. He's got some issues up front, by the way, with that offensive line. But after the game, a game in which Houston won the game 19-13, you may have seen this video out there and the sound. But C.J. Stroud, you know, meets Caleb Williams at midfield and decides to give him, you know, kind of a big grown-up talk right there with the mics hot around it. This is what it sounded like.
Good job out there,
yeah,
bro.
Yeah,
hey,
keep going.
Stop taking those hits.
Yeah,
I know.
Right.
Hey,
yeah.
Learn from those mistakes, and everything that you got, bro, is in you already, bro. You're going to be a hell of a player in this league.
Yeah.
All right, boy.
Appreciate it.
For sure.
So, if you've seen this, you see Caleb Williams essentially kind of pulling away, like, yeah, okay, thanks. And essentially kind of not ignoring completely, but pushing aside the advice, borderline lecture from C.J. Stroud. And I saw this yesterday, Denton, that a lot of people were really getting after Caleb Williams. Like, this is a terrible sign. Caleb Williams not taking advice from last year's offensive rookie of the year. This is who he is. This is, you know, a guy that's, you know, not going to take or listen to coaching or listen to advice. We got a problem here. That was not my reaction when I saw this. My reaction was, who the hell does C.J. Stroud think he is? Who the hell does C.J. Stroud think he is? Are seriously? You've played one season in the NFL? You're basically the same age as Caleb Williams? And you're going to give him the lecture with the cameras and the mics live? I thought it was overly performative. I thought it was super presumptuous, too. And I don't have any issue with Caleb Williams being, if he was thinking in his own mind, after, by the way, he was ravaged all night long and they lost the game, like, yeah, man, thanks. Appreciate it. I got it. What was your reaction to this, Denton?
I did not have the reaction you had. I didn't mind it. I didn't really feel a certain type of way. Either way, like right after the game is probably not the time to lecture Caleb Williams, but I think hearing from a peer that you respect is the right way to be given something like that. And it's clear that those two guys, at least I believe they have some sort of respect for each other off of the field. Again, maybe after he gets his ass kicked is not the time to do it, but I didn't mind C.J. Stroud telling him, like, hey, bro, you got to avoid those hits. I think every quarterback should be telling that to each other after games because some of these guys are just taking absolute beatings. And Caleb Williams, I mean, what, he gets sacked like 7 times? Like, he doesn't want to become like the Sam Howell guy. It's getting 9 sacks a game.
I don't know. That was my reaction, especially, and I saw it the other day, but didn't really pay much attention to it. And then I saw it again yesterday, and I saw a lot of the comments were really critical of Caleb Williams. It's not the way I felt. Look, first of all, it's not the setting for that kind of pick me up talk, borderline kind of. Hey, man, I've been around for a while. Let me tell you how, what you got to do. Like, if that's Brady, if that's, Aaron Rodgers, okay. It's C.J. Stroud, for crying out loud. He's good. Stroud's really good. I think he already, in 1 year and in two games this year, everything in watching him, I see a guy that's going to be at the top here. Like, he's going to be a top 10, top 5-ish kind of quarterback for a long, long time to go. Long way to go. But I just thought that was way too presumptuous. That is lacking in self-awareness. Like, sorry, but he's your age. He just won the Heisman Trophy. He was the number one pick. It's his second game, and he just got his ass kicked. Like, have a little bit of awareness about the situation. Know, and maybe he did know, and that's why I used the word performative, that this is going to be picked up by everybody. It's the national TV game. There are cameras. There are mics everywhere. Like, save it for a text, a long text message, or a call on your day off this next week. Especially if, they know each other, have respect for each other. That's something you do in private. Not there. I thought he misjudged it way too much from a guy that has 1 year in the league and won one playoff game. Way too much. Aaron Rodgers, fine. Tom Brady, if he's still in the league, fine. Not C.J. Stroud.
I do think C.J. Stroud misjudged that performative aspect that you mentioned. I do think he misjudged the amount of people that are wanting to find something wrong with Caleb Williams. Because, I agree with you in that some of the social media backlash against Caleb Williams is over the top. It feels like there's a portion of people that take to social media that are looking for ways to kind of undermine Caleb Williams. And maybe that's because, the flamboyancy that he has, and he did the fingernails and lip gloss and pink phone cases and all these things. But I do feel like there is, maybe that's where C.J. Stroud got it wrong, in that he kind of underestimated the amount of people that are looking to tear Caleb Williams down when it's not deserved at all. I think he's going to be a really good player in the league.
Yeah, I think that's true, but I just don't even think that should have factored into his decision to, give him the big boy talk at midfield. But you're right, and I think that is part of why the reaction was what it was, because people, I think, overwhelmingly perceived Caleb Williams's reaction to be very dismissive. And by the way, again, he just lost a game in which he was sacked 7 times, hit another 12 times in the game. He didn't play well. His team lost the game, coming off a week 1 in which he threw for 93 yards. He's having some struggles here, like 9.5 out of 10 rookie quarterbacks do in their rookie year. C.J. Stroud did not. He's the half he's essentially the 5% that come out swinging and come out ready to roll. My reaction was, who does he think he is? Like, I'm curious as to what people think. 301-230-0980, 301-230-0980. I wasn't planning on doing this. What time's Mitch on with us, 10:35?
Yeah, 10:35.
301-230-0980, 301-230-0980. What was your reaction, if you saw it, to C.J. Stroud giving, at midfield after the Sunday night game, giving Caleb Williams a bunch of advice on how he can become, a better quarterback, how he needs to handle being a quarterback in this league after Stroud was in it for just one season? 301-230-0980. I'm interested in the response, because I think you're right that there's this there's this existing opinion of Caleb Williams that isn't overly positive for some reason. He was a great college quarterback. Bad game at Notre Dame last year. Not a good game at Notre Dame. But he was a hell of a college quarterback. He's from here. I'm rooting for Caleb Williams. I think he's got exceptional talent. I was very split, as you, most of you know. I was like, I think it's really, really close between him and Daniels. But I think if I had had number one and I had been able to sit down like teams can and get a good feel for who these people are, it's possible that Caleb Williams would have been the number one pick for me based on his talent. But yeah, there's a ready to pounce attitude from a lot of NFL fans on Caleb Williams. And I think CJ Stroud, I'm not suggesting he intended this to be the result, but I think it was a little bit too performative, and because of it, it went viral, and people ended up viewing it negatively when it came to Caleb Williams. 301-230-0980. What did you think? We'll take some calls next. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980, the team980.com. We're free and live on the Odyssey app.
Good job out there,
yeah,
bro.
Yeah.
Hey,
keep going.
Stop taking those hits.
Yeah, I know.
Hey.
Yeah.
Learn from those mistakes, and everything that you got, bro, is in you already, bro. You're going to be a hell of a player in this league.
Yeah.
All right, boy.
Appreciate it.
For sure.
You know, CJ Stroud, you're going to be a hell of a player, too. You keep doing what you're doing. Keep up the good work 1 year into the books. I told Denton during the break that after my first year in radio, there's no chance I would have given the new guy that just came in advice, certainly not on the air. I would have let Andy Pollin give that guy the advice since he had been around for a while. And I think that was my reaction to that. Like, you know, I'm not Caleb Williams being dismissive of it after a loss, getting his ass kicked, being sacked seven times, and this guy who's been in the league a year and is my age is going to, you know, give me a brief little on-camera lecture? Nah. We'll talk later. Thank you. What did you think? 301-230-0980. Mitch Tischler coming up in about 10 minutes. Let's go to Alante. Alante, go ahead.
Hey, good morning, Kevin. How are you doing?
I'm well. Thanks for calling, Alante.
Yes, sir. I really enjoy your show. And ordinarily, Kevin, I think you're on point with a lot of things that you have to say. This morning, I think you're missing the mark a little bit. And the reason I say that is because quarterback is such an exclusive club. And for a young black quarterback, and I hate to bring race into it, but I think it does matter for a young black quarterback. They come into the league knowing that they're going to be looked at on a more detailed scale than your average quarterback. So for me, Shroud giving Caleb Williams a bit of advice or a bit of, you know, pep talk or what have you, I think it's a good thing.
Yeah, I got to tell you, I mean, I know you're not trying to inject race into the conversation, and that's fine, and I understand it. I understand your point of view, which is fine. You think it's good. I mean, what is it now? Are half the quarterbacks in the league black quarterbacks? I don't know what the number is. It certainly seems like it's probably half. I just think that those conversations, for me, I could be wrong. I think that's years ago now. With respect to, you know, the advice, you know, I'm sure every young quarterback coming into this league can use some advice from a veteran quarterback that's been through the wars. My point is CJ Stroud's 1 year into his career, and to do that in that setting is a little bit lacking in self-awareness. Now, I did see where CJ Stroud did say, somebody just sent me a link to this yesterday. He was asked about it, and he said, quote, "I was not trying to little bro him or anything. He knows that too. I have a ton of respect for him. I had so many guys coming up to me after games last year that meant the world to me that those guys even thought about giving me advice," closed quote. Let's go to Paul. Paul, go ahead.
Hey, Kevin.
What's up, Paul?
C.J. Stroud is a God-fearing young man who saw another quarterback who had just gone through hell and everything, just like he went through some last year. But for the most part, you know, he's led a good career, and he just wanted to help the young man out, just like he was helped out. That's all it was. I just think that Caleb, you know, I know he was pissed off because because he lost and everything. But I just think his arrogance sometimes is just not a good look.
Yeah, and you know, that's part of this too, is that he created a situation where people who believe that way about him, rightly or wrongly, had more evidence to sort of back up their view. And that's where, to me, it's like, I know C.J. Stroud's super young as well, and I'm not suggesting that he intentionally tried to make him look bad in that moment, but you got to have a little self-awareness as a one-year player in the league. And even if you're not a one-year player in the league, that guy just took a beating in a loss. Is that really the right time? These guys talk. They have each other's phone numbers. That could have happened on Tuesday. Thanks for the call. Let's go to James. James, go ahead. Thanks for holding.
Yeah, how you doing? I'll make this very brief. I agree with the other callers. I think you're off beat. I think that there's a brotherhood among quarterbacks, and while C.J. Stroud may be 1 year into the league, he's been playing football for a long time. They probably know each other, and that was just sound advice to him, brother to brother. And they will both grow and play. And there was nothing wrong with that, except that someone heard it, and you're making a big deal out of it. Okay? Thank you. Have a good day.
Thanks for the call. Appreciate it, James. Yeah, I think, I'm not the only person making a big deal out of it. The reason I saw it yesterday, again, is this is being discussed by a lot of NFL fans, and there's no doubt that I feel like my view is the minority view. No doubt about it. I don't think you're going to be able to change my mind. I think that, you know, Caleb Williams may have been dismissive in pulling away, but I kind of understand being dismissive in that moment because after a loss, and after a loss that was pretty ugly for him, I don't think he felt like, you know, getting the lecture right there at midfield with the cameras and the mics live. That could have come later, and I think C.J. Stroud, he's young. And by the way, he said, wasn't trying. He was asked about it yesterday. I wasn't trying to little bro him or anything. He knows that. I have a ton of respect for him. So it wasn't intentional, and I'm not suggesting it was intentional, but my first reaction was, who's C.J. Stroud to be giving Caleb Williams all of that advice, you know, for the whole world to see? Let's go to Reggie. Reggie's calling from Charlotte. Reggie, thanks for holding. Go ahead.
Yeah, Kevin, thanks for taking my call. Love the show. I kind of agree with the first two callers. And so it could have been, you know, what would we have said if C.J. Stroud would have just said, hey, man, good game, bro, and then walked off and didn't give that opportunity. Sometimes in defeat, like with Caleb Williams, sometimes in defeat, that's when you have to be your most humble and your most receptive. And even though he did take a beating, and even that's probably from Caleb Williams' perspective, that's probably not the most opportune time, you have to be open-minded and receptive. And even if it's C.J. Stroud, he has one more year in the league. And who is he? He's the offensive rookie of the year, who at his first five or six games didn't turn the ball over, didn't get sacked much. So he has some advice, even though he's a second-year vet, he has some advice to say, hey, man, listen, don't take that beating, because you're going to have a short career if you take that beating. Hey, get rid of the ball.
Everything I know what the advice was. I understand right. What the advice was. I just don't think it was for C.J. Stroud to be giving in that particular setting. Because here's the thing, Reggie. If it had been Aaron Rodgers out there giving the advice, or Tom Brady or Lamar Jackson, you know, guys that have been in the league for a while, even a Jalen Hurts, who's been a starter now going on year four, and he had kind of pulled away and been perceived, if not literally, dismissive, then I think I would have definitely been in the camp of, you got to suck it up, you got to take that advice, you lost the game, whatever. It's the fact that a quarterback that's been in the league for one season, good, really good rookie year, hell of a rookie year. You know who else was nearly an MVP early in his career? Carson Wentz. I'm not comparing the two. I actually think C.J. Stroud and his career has major legs. Ian, go ahead, finish it up.
I think your last point is the one I want to emphasize. I disagree with you. I think the character of the two people is paramount to this discussion. C.J. Stroud has been nothing but a model citizen, a very humble player. very Christian, very like does everything the right way. And I think he was being very genuine. I do see your point that he's very young. I do see your point that it was in front of the cameras. But when he went to approach him, when he said that, there was no malintent or anything that
I
would
said
be,
that it wasn't. I didn't suggest
I know,
that there was
I'm
malintent.
With you. But my point is, it's not performative because I don't think he ever expected CJ or Caleb Williams to walk away. I mean, do you remember when RG3 told Tony Romo?
Yes.
Hey, you're a great player. Like, that was more performative because that was such an imbalance. That was RG3 and his
well, that's fair. That there was an imbalance there in production, and he's telling that to a quarterback who is, you know, massively established already. So it's not really, you know, even close to apples to apples. I think you're coming into it though already having a conclusion on the character of these two players. I mean, it's fine to have a take on C.J. Stroud's character at this point, and I would agree with that. I think it's way too premature to have that feeling about Caleb Williams. Is he there? Okay. All right, we are... those of you that are on hold, we got to move on. We got Mitch Tischler next. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980, the team980.com. We're free and live on the Odyssey app.
Oh, rough night for the Nats last night. After two nights ago, they lost 10-1. Well, they came back to Citi Field and they lost 10-0. Yuck. In three games, the Nats outscored 22-2. Against the Mets. They continue their road trip tonight in Chicago at 7:40. You can hear that on 106.7 The Fan. Speculation surrounding the Panthers after benching Bryce Young. Are they going to trade him? Well, they've come out and said that is not the plan. They're not going to trade Bryce Young. They're going to keep him and then see kind of what happens with the Andy Dalton experiment. College football, apparently John Gruden kind of wants to go to college to coach. He was asked, does he want to coach again? He said the answer is yes. He did not specify exactly what level, but he did speak very highly of the coaches of the college game and perhaps expressed a little bit of interest to join them at the college level. And that's what's trending.
Anytime you can come back and start a segment with Van Halen, we're in a good spot, Denton. Good job. Mitch Tischler is part of J.P. Finley's Beltway Football Pod. He does work with Monumental Sports Network. I love having Mitch on when we get a chance to have Mitch on. I had Mitch on recently on the podcast, and here we are 2 weeks into the season, Mitch, at Mitch_Tischler, by the way, on X on Twitter. So what are your big takeaways from the first two games? How good do you feel about this team, or how bad do you feel about this team?
Well, I wanted to start with you had the right Van Halen with the right lead singer coming in, which is
yes,
important.
I did. David Lee Roth over Sammy Hagar any day of the week. True.
Every day of the week and twice on Sunday, especially when we're talking football. I'm excited about what we've seen so far. I mean, listen, I think that if anyone was being realistic about where this roster was and where this team was, you're not talking about a team that's necessarily competing to win the NFC East or competing to, you know, win the NFC, you know, win multiple playoff games. It's about Jaden Daniels' development. And through 2 weeks in the season, I think you have to be excited about what we've seen from him, both in the pocket and out. I mean, obviously, you need him to protect himself a little bit more when he's running the ball. But that two-minute drill on Sunday to go down the field and win the game is incredible building blocks for the kid. And for the offense to run a 425 yards, to not punt, to get in the red zone six times, of course you want to finish and score touchdowns. And I think that development will come. When you're in the red zone, things get sped up, and I think he's still developing and learning there. But let's be honest, they didn't punt one time, and they racked up 400-plus total yards, and you got to feel good about that.
No doubt. When you don't punt without a turn, when you don't turn the ball over and you don't punt in a game, it's hard to really knock anybody offensively. Of course, you can pick apart the red zone stuff and the penalties. But you said something, and by the way, you're not the only one that feels this way, so let me say that up front. But I'm wondering why there's this default through 2 weeks of, look, this season, and I believe the season's about Jaden Daniels more than anything else, but I also believe the season is in play. And I think a lot of people, including many fans, don't think that this season is anything but a building block season. It's the NFL. Tampa, Minnesota, New Orleans, and Seattle are undefeated through 2 weeks. We've had the biggest underdogs on the board in weeks one and two lose outright at home in the first 2 weeks. Are we being too premature in kind of burying this season and listing it or describing it as just a building block season?
I don't think so, because to me, you enter with realistic expectations. And I think you can look at the Texans last year. They didn't go in thinking that they were going to turn the team around in one season the way that they did, but they got the right quarterback, and ipso facto, they made the playoffs, and all of a sudden they're turning into a world beater over there in the AFC. There's a chance that Jaden Daniels can be that guy, but like you said, we're only 2 weeks into the season, and if you look at the way that Adam Peters and Dan Quinn built this roster, you can tell that they didn't go out and spend big money this offseason. They didn't go after any of the big impact players that potentially would have been out there that they could have signed, that they could have paid a lot of money to. They're looking at this as a long-term build. And listen, we had 25 years of terrible ownership and leadership where they would go out and, you know, try and break the bank and win the offseason and do all these different things. It's a breath of fresh air to approach this in a realistic way and in a long-term look. Now, that doesn't mean that if your quarterback turns out to be, you know, the next Patrick Mahomes, the next C.J. Stroud, you know, the next Josh Allen, whoever he may be, you know, that accelerates the timeline. But I think for right now, it's a good way of looking at the building of this team and hoping that Jaden Daniels continues this ascent and continues playing well and proving that he's the guy. And if he is, you know, the sky's the limit for any team with a star quarterback.
Yeah, I hear you on the roster, and I hear you on the approach in the offseason. All of those things are true. But when you get into a season, put it this way, Mitch, if they were to go into Cincinnati Monday night and win, I think the perspective would change quickly as to what this season has in store potentially. I think the building block season, 7-10 would be just fine as long as Jaden's great. And by the way, that would be a good result to the season if we find out that they got the quarterback right. But this league is really strange, man. Things happen. With that said, I'm not so confident in what I am proposing that we at least be open-minded about after 2 weeks, because the defense has been just alarmingly awful. I wasn't expecting it. Were you?
I was not expecting the secondary to be particularly good, but I thought that the pressure up front and kind of the creativeness that Joe Witt Jr. And Dan Quinn approach a defensive style with could help maybe mask some of those issues. But the issues to me start up front. And the fact that, you know, you're not getting pressure from two of your top three highest paid players, they're not able to get to the quarterback, they're not able to be disruptive in the run game, is a big issue. And that's allowing teams, the fact that also your defensive ends aren't able to get to the quarterback, are allowing teams to double Daron Payne and John Allen there in the middle. And the secondary issues are real. If this coaching staff went into the season thinking that, you know, Emmanuel Forbes and Benjamin St. Juice were going to be, you know, a lockdown answer and they were going to be equal to some of the guys that they had in Dallas, I think that's a little bit short-sighted. So I expected that this defense was going to struggle. I'm surprised with the way that they're struggling.
Yeah, I thought, like you did, that certainly corner was an issue and who was going to be the pass rusher on this team. But I guess I was kind of leaning on, they've got Dan Quinn, they've got Joe Witt, they've added, you know, they've essentially changed the defense personnel-wise by two-thirds in terms of the contributors. And last year was really kind of sabotaged and doomed before it started, and I just was expecting something different. And it's early. We might still get something different. All right, let's go back to the offensive side of the ball. When we get to the end of these 17 weeks, and you sound like you're bullish so far on Jaden Daniels, as am I, what are we going to say about this team offensively? Were they a versatile, multi-dimensional team, pass to run? Were they run heavy? Did they rely on, you know, quick game too much? What do you see in terms of how this will play out offensively for the season?
Yeah, I mean, listen, I think when you look at Dan Quinn as a head coach, you're hoping that he evolved from his time when he was in Atlanta. the same way that you're hoping that Cliff Kingsbury has evolved since his time in Arizona, because those Arizona offenses were too reliant on quick game and were too reliant around balls around the line of scrimmage and getting the ball out quickly. And certainly that's something that you want to do early on with your rookie quarterback, but you want to see the offense continue to build. And, you know, as we look at some of these, you know, little quick screens to the wide receivers, you also see, you know, their lead blocker kind of faking the block and going downfield and maybe looking for some deep shots there. If this offense doesn't continue to evolve and start looking a little bit further downfield and stretching the field vertically a little bit more, you're going to become too predictable and you're going to have too many people in the box to be comfortable running the ball. You're going to have too many people around the line of scrimmage to be comfortable throwing those short passes. So I think it's, you know, as much as we talk about it being about Jaden kind of learning and understanding what he needs to do, I think it's also about seeing and hoping that Cliff Kingsbury is able to, you know, evolve from where he was in Arizona. And ultimately, having Brian Robinson and Austin Eckler both in the run and the pass game, I think will go a long way, because those two have been a pretty dynamic duo through 2 weeks, and I'm impressed with the way that B-Rob has run, and for Eckler, the way that he's worked in pass pro, as well as kind of those middle screens that I think two straight weeks now he's had third and long conversions on those. So at the end of the season, I'm hoping that we can talk about the evolution of this offense and how we've seen it grow from week 1 to week 17, and then as you start looking towards years in the future, other ways in which it can grow and keep evolving and keep expanding downfield.
You know, one of the things that I think everybody talked about heading into the season was, in terms of potential weaknesses, was the offensive line. How do you think it's performed in the first two games?
I think, to me, I've been breaking up the offensive line between the interior guys and the outside guys, and I've liked a lot what I've seen from the interior. The false start penalties from last week are unacceptable and need to be changed, need to be fixed. You can't continue to have that. But I do think part of that comes from having a rookie quarterback and getting the cadence consistently correct, as well as the guys kind of understanding how Jaden is going to make the calls at the line of scrimmage.
Right.
But they also ran for 200-plus yards, and B-Rob ran for 6 yards a carry last week. So you can't really crush the offensive line too much. To me, I think the issue is going to be right tackle, or has been right tackle and will continue to be. It's not that these guys are getting beat particularly often. The problem is with Andrew Wiley in particular, that when he does get beat, he gets beat so clean,
badly,
and so quick to the quarterback,
yeah,
that he gives Jaden Daniels no chance. And I like what Cliff has done, because a lot of times you see Eckler or one of the tight ends kind of lined up next to Wiley, helping him out. As a tackle, when you have help on the outside, your one job is to not get beat on the inside. And in week one against the Bucks, it happened on at least two occasions, maybe three. And last week against the Giants, we saw it as well. So I think that's something that needs to change. And I think as they become more comfortable with Brandon Coleman on the left side, and Brandon Coleman understands the NFL game a little bit better, we might see Cornelius Lucas start working in a little on the right side as well. But again, I think, you know, these are kind of the steps that this team can take to improve on the offensive line and as a whole.
Mitch Tischler joining us here, courtesy of our BetQL guest hotline. So, other than Terry and right now maybe Zach Ertz, is there anybody in the pass-catching group that you think is about to emerge? And I know what Terry's numbers are. We've talked ad nauseum about them this week. But still relying on Terry to be their number one wideout threat. Who comes next?
Well, it's funny because week one, everyone was complaining that Terry didn't get the ball, and I was loud amongst them that Terry didn't get the ball until 3 minutes left in the third quarter. And now, you know, week two against the Giants, he gets four catches for 8 yards at one point or something like that.
Yeah,
I'm hoping Noah Brown is that guy that emerges. I think Eckler has been an important part of this pass game because he's so good in pass pro, and then also has the wiggle and the speed and the strength to make big plays there. But Noah Brown is the guy that I'm keeping my eye on. Obviously, he and Jaden have a little bit of a connection. We saw it, you know, with the three catches for almost 60 yards last week. And ultimately, if they're able to have a number two receiver kind of emerge and even be a reliable target, that will only help out Terry. Because right now on the outside, you saw it in Tampa. We saw it against the Giants. Teams are rolling coverage over to Terry because there's no other threat on the field to go deep at all. And if Noah Brown can continue to find himself open and, you know, use his good hands and his body to to make these catches and be a consistent target, that's going to help out this offense a lot.
Whose performance in the first 2 weeks do you think has been underrated?
I don't know how much you guys have talked about Benjamin St. Juice last week against the Giants, but you know he deserved a fair amount of criticism for a couple plays against Tampa, but he also almost had that great diving interception against them as well. Against the Giants, you know, Malik Neighbors' production went down when they started kind of moving BSJ around with him a little bit, and he was able to punch the ball out and get a turnover. The corners are an issue. There's no question. And Benjamin St. Juice certainly has his faults. But he's, as far as this Dan Quinn, Joe Witt defense goes, he's done pretty much what they've asked of him. Even when you look back at their years in Dallas and all the gaudy interception numbers, those guys also gave up a lot of yards because they asked their corners to cover one-on-one in press coverage, you know, with little safety help quite often. And that's a lot to ask of a corner, especially guys like Emmanuel Forbes and Benjamin St. Juice, who haven't particularly proven that they are good at that role. So the fact that we've seen kind of some growth from him and, you know, a couple nice plays, I think speaks well, and hopefully he can continue ascending.
I don't know the answer to this. It just seems to me in the first two games they've played a lot more man than zone. Do you know if that's true?
Yeah. I think that's what Joe Witt and Dan Quinn want to do. Is we saw it in training camp. We saw it, you know, when the Commanders were playing the Cowboys, you know, the past couple of years. They like to put those corners in press coverage. I mean, think back to a couple of years ago with Terry McLaurin against Trayvon Diggs. I think it was a game at FedEx Field. Terry had, you know, four catches for 100 yards and two touchdowns or something, and he kind of burned Trayvon up and down the field. And, you know, the next couple times they played, Diggs got the best of them. But those corners in the old Cowboys in this defense that they're playing in now are going to give up some big plays. The coaching staff is okay with giving up big plays if they can make some big plays as well and get some turnovers. So I think we're going to see them continue to play a lot of man, continue to play single high safety, continue to try and find a way to bring pressure to the quarterback. And it's going to be incumbent on the guys that are out there to step up and get interceptions, make big plays, get turnovers when they can.
If I told you that they either won Monday night or they were very close to winning on Monday night, how did it happen?
They ran the snot out of the football and kept the ball out of Joe Burrow's hands. I mean, listen, Joe Burrow has not been particularly – he hasn't been the Joe Burrow that we think of when we think of him. And, you know, there are other issues going on behind the scenes in Cincinnati with contracts and all those different things that are happening. I'm not predicting that they go out and win, but I don't know that I'd be entirely shocked if they did. The Bengals have been poor in the month of September. The past couple of years, they've been a team that has continued to grow, but man, I don't know how they're going to stop this passing offense. I don't know how they're going to slow down that Bengals team.
Yeah. If there's a chance too, T. Higgins, right? Denton is back for Monday night.
Yeah. I mean, across the board, they have weapons and forget the receivers and who everyone knows. They also have a pair of running backs who do a pretty good job of catching the ball out of the backfield. And as we know, in Washington, linebacker play has been an issue. Hopefully, this Frankie Louvu and Bobby Wagner duo is able to slow those guys down a little bit. But there's a lot to be nervous about when the defense is on the field come Monday night.
Great job. Appreciate it. Hope you're well. Talk soon.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, Mitch Tischler, everybody. Denton will have his news when we come back. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980, theteam980.com. We're free and live on the Odyssey app.